In front of Gucci in the winter, I seen you with your girl, sporting, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the coupe back shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun well done. Looking for a ring, I seen none, so I hopped out the coupe and hot the soup to stop and introduce like I'm shining. You my destiny, in your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not for ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full up a disease. My Firebird, if my Firebird cannot pass the curve, girl, put your ass on the dumb at your butt.
You're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, rest your head on my bed, and let me get between your legs. Lay on your back, take it from the back, like a bag you're supposed to. I know you like that. Scream with the neighbors when they sleep. Grab the sheets with your teeth, wiggle your butt cheeks. For the styles over your body.
Marco, you're at CITR on the west side. You're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9. That's a beautiful day. Yesterday and today, it was very warm. I think it's the shortest day of the year. Which day was that? 18, 19, 20. I think Tuesday was the shortest day, or could have been Wednesday. But anyway, now our daylight time is going to be increasing by a few seconds every day. So it gets pretty dark out, and that is because the tilt of the Earth. And I was thinking about that the other day. It's quite amazing. We have a big rock. We're sitting on a big rock. It spins. It's orbiting a sun, a star, and it tilts. Isn't that amazing? And with regularity, too. So if you just stop and think about that, that's quite amazing how we're on a big piece of rock moving through space, orbiting a star, and we're tilting. So now our tilt's going to go back the other way. And the moon is moving farther and farther out every day by the smallest amount. And every year, I think it's a couple of inches or a couple of centimeters, something like that, 2-point-something centimeters or 2-point-something inches. And in 600 million years, our sun will have moved out far enough where we will not have any more total solar eclipse, because it's going to be moving farther and farther out. So right now, we're the only planet-moon system in the solar system where we have total eclipses. Well, what's on the plate today? Last week, I talked about pulsars. So what's a pulsar? A pulsar is a very quickly spinning neutron stars. So when some stars die and they go supernova, they turn into neutron stars. If they're much bigger in mass, they'll turn into black holes, and we won't see anything coming from them again. But a neutron star is very dense. I believe 1 teaspoon of a neutron star, or a tablespoon, I don't know if it makes much difference, would weigh as much as Mount Everest. So they're very packed, very compact, very tight, and they can spin very quickly. So a pulsar is a neutron star that spins very quickly, and it emits a regular pulse of radio wave. So believe the fastest neutron star spins at about 750 times per second. So it emits 700 and something pulses every second. And certain neutron stars spin a couple times each second. And if they spin twice a second, they will make two rotations in a second. They will send out 2 radio pulses every second. So now, why am I talking about a neutron star? Well, last week we talked about neutron stars and pulsars, and how the pulses that they give are like clockwork. They're just regular. I believe neutron stars eventually slow down. I don't know if it's thousands or millions of years, but they, at the present, when we're watching a neutron star, we can pretty well count on its pulse to be accurate. So it's not used as a clock. Maybe it could be, but the story that I read last week was about gravitational waves, and I believe I was talking about gravitational waves that are sent out by colliding black holes. And it's not just any black hole, these are colliding supermassive black holes. So at our sun, at the center of our galaxy, there's a black hole, Sagittarius A star, weighs in about 4.3 or 4.6 million solar masses. So that's called a supermassive black hole. Some black holes, supermassive black holes, are billions of times the size or the mass of the sun. So when two of these collide, the LIGO observatory, I don't think it could observe those. And also what LIGO cannot observe is when neutron stars or when supermassive black holes are in the merging process, what happens is it could take millions of years for them to eventually collide and form one black hole or form one neutron star. So while they're merging, they do a dance around each other. They get closer and closer. They orbit each other closer. And in this process, they are giving off gravitational waves. So I believe LIGO cannot detect these kind of gravitational waves. And for, again, for these people that are, and if there's any aliens listening, hello aliens, LIGO is in Hanford, Washington. It's a gravitational wave observatory. And what it can do, I think it can detect gravitational waves from an event when the neutron stars or the black holes are just about to merge or as they've merged. So supermassive black holes can take millions of years to merge. So what happens? Two galaxies could collide, and each galaxy or two galaxies could merge. Let's call it that. So for example, our galaxy, it is getting closer and closer to something called the Andromeda Galaxy. So when we merge, Andromeda, okay, I'm looking up the Andromeda black hole, how big it is. But anyway, when they merge, then the black hole will, of our galaxy, Sagittarius A star, will merge with the black hole from the Andromeda Galaxy. So I'm just looking it up now. There's an article I'm reading here. It says, Andromeda's supermassive black hole awakens. For a decade, NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory has observed the Andromeda Galaxy for a combined total of nearly 1 million seconds, given an astronomers an unprecedented view of the nearest supermassive black hole outside the Milky Way. Astronomers think that most galaxies, including the Milky Way, contain giant black holes at their core that are millions of times more massive than the Sun. At a distance of just under 3 million light years from Earth, Andromeda, also known as M31, provides an opportunity to study its black holes in extraordinary detail. Now, I'm looking for the name of this black hole. I'm reading an article called Andromeda Supermassive Black Hole Awakens. It's in an article from something called the Daily Galaxy. Okay, so the supermassive black hole in Andromeda, like Sagittarius A star, is 10 to 100,000 times farther in X-ray light than astronomers might expect. So I'm trying to search. It doesn't give the name and it doesn't give the size, but I believe it could be 10 or 20, and that's just a guess because it doesn't say. So I'm sorry about that. I tried to name, look at the name. Okay, it doesn't tell me the name, but what happens is the black hole in Andromeda, it is bigger than the Milky Way, and Andromeda is bigger than the Milky Way. So when the Andromeda Galaxy merges with us, maybe in 5 billion years, maybe sooner, first the galaxies will merge, and then the black holes in the two galaxies will start moving towards each other. And then they will be gravitationally bound. They'll do a dance, they'll do a special whatever, and a special jig, and as they approach each other, they are emitting gravitational waves. Now, some, let's say if people are still here on Earth after this merger, we could measure the gravitational waves from those two spiraling black holes. So the black holes will spiral into each other. They emit gravitational waves in the process. And then when they do merge, they'll also emit gravitational waves. So what I was talking about last week was these gravitational waves from supermassive black hole collisions. It's hard for LIGO to detect them. I don't even think LIGO can detect them. Maybe they can. But what I think I'm trying to make this exact, but when you have an event like a black hole merger, and if two black holes merge, if they are big black holes, they'll give off, the bigger the black holes that are merging, the lower the frequency of the gravitational waves. That's what I believe. But anyway, what happened with the neutron stars when they collided a few months ago is they not only gave off gravitational waves, but they gave off a light show. They gave off a lot of radiation, visible X-ray, infrared, ultraviolet, microwave, whatever. It gives off a lot of, but when black holes merge, they only give off gravitational waves. So when supermassive black holes collide, they distort space-time and they send this gravitational wave out. And as the gravitational wave moves out, it also distorts space-time. So that's how LIGO in Hanford, Washington, when it measures an event like a black hole collision or a neutron star collision, the gravitational waves that are sent out distort space-time, and they can measure this distortion of space-time. And they say, aha, there we have it. We have proof that we have just detected a gravitational wave from a black hole merger or from a neutron star merger. And there's other things that can set off gravitational waves. But when two supermassive black hole collides, scientists are now using a pulsar. So a pulsar, as I said, is a neutron star that rotates quite a few times a second. As it does, it sends off little beeps of radio waves. So, for example, if a pulsar is rotating at five times a second, let's say it makes five orbits in 1 second, it would send off five little beeps of radio, beep, 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 five times in 1 second. And these are pretty regular pulses. Now, when the gravitational waves hit this pulsar, it'll distort the space-time around the pulsar, and somehow it will, let's say, I'm trying to find the correct word because I don't have the article in front of me, but it will distort the space-time around, and that's why scientists can measure the distortion in space-time or the gravitational wave from seeing how the pulsar is offset by the gravitational wave. Now, I don't know if that's a very good explanation, but I don't want to try. Let's see, I'll try once more. Okay, so somehow this regular pulse that's coming from the pulsar, it's distorted somehow, and scientists can hopefully measure this distortion, and that'll give them, haha, we found a gravitational wave. So gravitational waves seem to be the new thing, the in thing. And so I talked about gravitational waves last week, and I just talked about gravitational waves for about 15 minutes. So they're pretty cool for scientists. For example, the event a couple of months ago with the neutron stars colliding, some scientists said it was the most significant thing that's happened in their scientific careers. So these are big things. Some scientists have studied years, all their life, and all of a sudden, one event, and it confirms all their theories that they had. So it's quite an exciting thing. And from these things, we can learn more about the nature of neutron stars and a bunch of other stuff, and natures of black holes. We learn more about gravitational waves and things like that. Okay, so when I return, I am going to talk more about something else. So thank you for listening. Now I'm going to go to commercial, and I'm going to talk first in the commercial about the Accessibility Collective. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why?
because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
All Access Pass is back for season two. We are a collectively run weekly program that discusses equity, inclusion, and accessibility issues on and off UBC's campus, including both visible and invisible disabilities. You can catch All Access Pass every Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. Anyone can get involved. No experience is necessary. People of all abilities are welcome to join. Check us out on Facebook at All Access Pass or get involved by emailing accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Don't get in no trouble.
No, we're just trying to win this dance
club. You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on AstroTalk.
We got the Refugees All-Stars, Robert Devin in the club, Y Club Jean.
Look at here, look at shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her. Buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another one-half hour of astronomy talk with your host, Marco, on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. Get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad because you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me, I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. My true slang flow worldwide like a current. With the every spot where nobody got
it. Thank you for that, Rohit and Michael John. So we're back on Astro Talk. What were we talking about? We're talking about a lot of different fun stuff. And black hole mergers, neutron star merger, gravitational waves, all this cool stuff. So let's go to an article now. It's dated October 20, 2017. So it's pretty current. It's like Monday. Today's Thursday. So it's from www.nasa.gov, and it says, Hubble unravels a twisted cosmic knot. So it shows an image of two galaxies merging, and they're all twisted. What happens when galaxies merge? Also, a lot of stuff gets flung around, and stars and gas and all these nebulas, and gets stirred, and all of a sudden there's lots of star formation. So here we have a merger of two galaxies, and what I was talking about earlier, when two galaxies merge, their supermassive black holes can merge too. So that's what's going to happen with us and Andromeda. I try to locate the name of the black hole. Maybe they haven't named it yet, but Andromeda's black hole, it could be something like 10 million solar masses or more. I don't know. I'm just speculating because Andromeda's bigger than the Milky Way. So here's the article, October 20, 2017. And it's called Hubble Unravels a Twisted Cosmic Knot. It's got a nice little picture of a galaxy merger. Okay, so this image captured by the NASA Hubble Space Telescope shows what happens when two galaxies become one. The twisted cosmic knot seen here is NGC 2623 or ARP 243. And is located about 250 million light years away in the constellation of Cancer. So again, when we're looking at this, this is light we're receiving. It left that that knot 250 million years ago. So since then, it's progressed on. It's done. It's gone through its merger dance. Maybe it's not finished yet. But what we're seeing, of course, which is so wonderful about astronomy, we can see things that are 250 million light years away. So the stuff happened 250 million years ago, and we're getting the light now. Okay, I'm going to keep reading the article. NGC 2623 gained its unusual and distinctive shape as the result of a major collision and subsequent merger between two separate galaxies. Now it says here, major collision. Let me think about that. When I've read about it, it's like, for example, the next dearest star to us is the, I should know this, it's on the tip of my tongue, but it's 4.3 light years away. So in between us and that star system, there's mostly space. There could be some gas or this or that or some odd stuff. But in a galaxy, I guess there's mostly empty space. So when two galaxies merge, is there a major collision? Well, I guess there is, but sometimes nothing happens because when the galaxies are merging, the space in between. But in the center, yeah, there could be violent stuff. Okay, so I'm going to read on. I'm going to read that thing again. The last sentence again. NGC 2623 gained its unusual and distinctive shape as the result of a major collision and subsequent merger between two separate galaxies. This violent encounter caused clouds of dust within the two galaxies to be compressed and stirred up, in turn triggering a sharp spike of star formation. This active star formation is marked by speck patches of bright blue. These can be seen clustered both in the center and along the trails of dust and gas, forming NGC 2623 sweeping curves known as tidal tails. So the blue area, I guess, is the area of star formation. These tails extend for roughly 50,000 light years from end to end. Many young, hot newborn stars form in a bright stellar cluster. At least 170 such clusters are known to exist within NGC 2623. It's quite amazing, isn't it, how nature works? You have stars being born from a major collision. So when a neutron star or when a star goes nova, it becomes a neutron star or a black hole, or when neutron stars collide or black holes collide, stuff's thrown out and stirs the pot. New stars are made. Isn't that wonderful? Things die and things rise up from the ashes of that death. So NGC 2623 is in a late stage of merging. It is thought the Milky Way will eventually resemble NGC 2623 when it collides with our neighboring galaxy, the Andromeda Galaxy, in 4 billion years' time. So, again, our galaxy is going to collide with Andromeda. So, it says here in about 4 billion years' time, I've read there could be 5 billion years. I've read that I thought it was common knowledge, Andromeda and our Milky Way is 2 million light years apart. Or no. Let me think about this. Okay, so it's going to take quite a few billion years for them to merge. So I think they're 200 million light years apart. I hope I'm not making a mistake. Okay, so now I'm going to go to the next article. And it's about Firebird 2 and NASA mission locate whistling space electrons origins. So, wow. Whistling space electrons. What's a whistling space electron? Okay, so I'm going to read this. It's about the Van Allen belt. And it's dated, November 15, 2017. And it's called Firebird 2 to NASA mission locate whistling space electrons origin. So I'm going to read it now. It's from www.nasa.gov. Scientists have long known that solar energized particles trapped around the planet are sometimes scattered into Earth's upper atmosphere, where they can contribute to beautiful aurora displays. Yet for decades, no one has known exactly what is responsible for hurling these energetic electrons on their way. Recently, two spacecrafts found themselves at just the right places at the right time to witness firsthand both the impulsive electron loss and its cause. New research using data from NASA's Van Allen Probes mission and Firebird 2 CubeSat has shown that a common plasma wave in space is likely responsible for the impulsive loss of high-energy electrons into Earth's atmosphere. Known as Whistler mode chorus, these waves are created by fluctuating electric and magnetic fields. So I wonder how they know that. That's interesting stuff. So there's all kinds of, I guess, this is what I got in a nutshell is... why is there a magnetic field around our Earth in space? So inside our planet, in around the core, we have, I guess, a solid core, but ions in the lava circulate, and these are moving charges then. So these are moving charges, create magnetic fields. So what happens is a magnetic field is created around our Earth, and this is what protects us from space radiation. And then when a magnetic field is moving, it further enhances the effect of the electrons or the ions orbiting inside the Earth's core, and they reinforce each other, so we got a nice magnetic field around our Earth. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the article. New research using data from NASA's Van Allen probes mission and Firebird 2 CubeSat has shown that a common plasma wave in space is likely responsible for the impulsive loss of high-energy electrons into Earth's atmosphere. Known as Whistler mode chorus, these waves are created by fluctuating electric and magnetic fields. The waves have characteristic rising tones, reminiscent of the sounds of chirping birds, and are able to efficiently accelerate electrons. The results have been published in a paper, Geophysical Review Letters. So Whistler waves, there's a picture here. Whistler waves is heard by the EMFISIS instrument aboard NASA's Van Allen probes as it passed around Earth. Okay, so says Aaron Brenneman, a researcher at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis and lead author of the paper, and quote, observing the detailed chains of events between chorus waves and electrons requires a conjunction between two or more satellites. There are certain things you can't learn by having only one satellite. You need simultaneous observation at different locations. The study combined data from Firebird 2, which cruises at a height of 300 miles above Earth, and from one of the two Van Allen probes, which travel in a wide orbit high above the planet. From different vantage points, they could gain a better understanding of the chain of cause and effect of the loss of these high energy electrons. So what do these electrons do? They're whistling, so big deal. What else? They contribute to the aurora. What else? Let's see. Okay, far from being an empty void, the space around Earth is a jungle of invisible fields and tiny particles. It's draped with twisted magnetic fields and swooping electrons and ions. Dictating the movements of these particles, Earth's magnetic environment traps electrons and ions in concentric belts encircling the planet. These belts, called the Van Allen radiation belts, keep most of the high-energy particles at bay. Sometimes, however, the particles escape, careening down into the atmosphere. Typically, there is a slow drizzle of escaping electrons, but occasionally impulsive bunches of particles, called microbursts, are scattered out of the belt. Later, on June 20, 2016, the Van Allen probes observed chorus waves from its lofty vantage point, and immediately after, Firebird 2 saw microbursts. This new result confirmed that the chorus waves play an important role in controlling the loss of energy electron. Well, thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You've been listening to Astro. Next is the sports guys. So thank you for listening. Have a good weekend.